This podcast is for alcoholics that have a willingness to recover from their alcoholism by being taught and practicing the principles of the 12 steps as outlined in the Big Book and the 12 and 12 of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Ilya, and I am an alcoholic. Page XIII, forward to first edition, first paragraph. We of Alcoholics Anonymous are more than 100 men and women who have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. To show other alcoholics precisely how we have recovered is the main purpose of this book. For them, we hope these pages will prove so convincing that no further authentication will be necessary. We think this account of our experiences will help everyone to better understand the alcoholic. Many do not comprehend that the alcoholic is a very sick person, and besides, we are sure that our way of living has its advantages for all. Page 7 of the 12 Steps and 12 Traditions. Step 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. This and the next two steps are concerned with personal relations. Learning to live with others is a fascinating adventure. Obstacles: reluctance to forgive, non-admission of wrongs to others, purposeful forgetting, necessity of exhaustive survey of past, deepening insight results from thoroughness, kinds of harms done to others, avoiding extreme judgments, taking the objective view. Step 8 is the beginning of the end of isolation. So that's the summary of step 8 in the table of contents. And we'll get right into it on page 77. First full paragraph. Steps 8 and 9 are concerned with personal relations. First, we take a look backward and try to discover where we have been at fault. Next, we make a vigorous attempt to repair the damage we have done. And third, having thus cleaned away the debris of the past, we consider how, with our newfound knowledge of ourselves, we may develop the best possible relations with every human being we know. So in my last podcast, I said that there are three things that we need to do when we sit down with somebody that we've harmed. And the first one is explain that our faults are our character defects to the individual that we harmed. We admit that. So they could be a fault, a mistake, a shortcoming, or a character defect. That's what we're admitting. So where had we been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, fearful, and inconsiderate? That is the first admission. Now, there may be certain defense strategies or offensive tactics that we used in relation to the person that we've harmed. So just to say those words is not enough. We have to understand what actions were taken that define selfishness in that situation. So we really need to dig deep if we've done a thorough harms to others list and have concluded what our part is in the harm. Then we should also know how that was selfish, how you were self-seeking, how you were dishonest. Just saying the word is not enough. So what we need to do is, secondly, is explain to the individual what will be done to repair the damage. So if I was selfish and stole money that didn't belong to me, financial is always an easy cut and dry one, so I use that often. But a financial stealing, the definition of selfishness is I wanted it, so I took it. I was willing to run you over to get what I wanted. So let's not confuse self-centeredness with selfishness. Yes, selfishness is consumption of oneself, but self-centeredness is the same thing. Consumption, of oneself, consumed, excuse me, with oneself, and selfishness is the action that I took to get what I wanted. And if it hurt you, then that's an amend that needed to be made. So therefore, what did I exactly do? And now, how will I repair that damage? That is the second thing that we are explaining to the individual. And the third thing is now we are trying to explain that we are changing. Develop the best possible relations is a proclamation that we're going to do this because we're trying, where the reason we're doing this is because we're trying to change. Admitting your fault, repairing the damage, and explaining that you're trying to change is how every outline of each amend should go. And that's in the very first paragraph of page 77. This helped me tremendously. I thought that each amend was going to be unique and different, and the substance of the amend was unique and different for each individual. But the process and the outline and how I began the amend was the same format for every single one. And that made it really easy because I didn't get tongue-tied and I wasn't able draw a blank when I knew, all right, what do I do first? May admit my faults as it relates to the damage, explain how I'm going to repair the damage, and in some cases I may need their input on what we're going to do to rectify it. And then we need to have the individual understand that we're trying to change. So I have underlined in that paragraph the word fault, repair the damage, and develop the best possible relations. That's one, two, and three. So that should help you understand what you're willing to do. And if you can stick to that format and fill in the blanks, you're on your way to willingness. So he gets into in the next page, on page 78, the three things that prevent us from the willingness. Now, as an alcoholic, I will either go into one of these sanctuaries of my thinking to deny, blame, or be in fear of the outcome. One of those three things is certainly going to be my go-to rationalization. As an alcoholic, I cannot help rationalizing. When my pride and my security is under threat, which are the two things that are mainly that I'm protecting, is my pride and my security. I am going to think of every excuse and everything that I didn't do wrong in order to justify and rationalize the amend away. So they're called obstacles. Bill Wilson calls them obstacles. So let's start with the first one. That is the first full paragraph on page 78, and this is the first obstacle he starts with is blame. And I have blame written in the margin of this first full paragraph on 78. I'll read the paragraph. These obstacles, however, are very real. The first and one of the most difficult has to do with forgiveness. The moment we ponder a twisted or broken relationship with another person, our emotions go on the defensive. To escape looking at the wrongs we have done another, we resentfully focus on the wrong he has done us. This is especially true if he has, in fact, behaved badly at all. Triumphantly, we seize upon his misbehavior as the perfect excuse for minimizing or forgetting our own. So, a lot of these other people that I had to make amends to did behave badly. There's a lot of cases that I can think of where I was not entirely at fault. But remember, the point of this exercise is to clean up our side of the street, not shed light on theirs. If they choose to react with sharing their faults, then that's fine. But we don't criticize them as we had read in the big book. So what I'm doing is I'm already criticizing them in my mind by not looking at the wrongs that I have done, but looking at the wrongs they have done. So I resentfully repeat the damage they caused me, and that justifies and rationalizes away the need to make an amend. And it very well may be true that this individual harmed you significantly. Lots of times they haven't. We just take it as such because we are very emotionally sensitive people and we take everything personally. So anything to get out of having to make the amend, blame is an excellent obstacle for our alcoholic minds to retreat to. So what I have had experience with this is in my resentments. There are people that I just simply do not like, and I've harmed them, and I now need to approach them and make an amend. Well, no thank you. I blame them for being in this position in the first place. And I'll reluctantly look at my part, which are my defects, in the situation at hand. And that is a very difficult obstacle to overcome, especially if they've harmed you in ways that you find unforgivable. So I said alcoholics are emotionally sensitive just a minute ago. So where did I find that? Well, if you turn to page 125 of the big book, all right, I want you to go to the second full paragraph. And at the end of the second full paragraph, towards the narrow bottom of the page, it says, "We alcoholics are sensitive people. It takes some of us a long time to outgrow that serious handicap." Even if you have years of recovery, a long time is a long time. There are many times where I do make amends, even now, that I don't want to make. Let's say the customer or the other person, typically it's a customer in my line of business, treated me with disrespect, and I don't believe that I owe them amend for reacting sensitively. I'm still very capable of doing that. It's a mistake I continue to make, which is also a flaw or a shortcoming. And the mistake is that I need to get revenge on the customer for speaking to me that way. Don't you know who I am? Don't you know that you're not superior to me, even though I'm on the service side of the desk or the sales side of the desk? I can't control how this other person behaves, but I can only focus on the way they behave. And now they're attacking my pride, so I may make a comment in return and put them in their place. Yes, they may be a jerk, and yes, they may have said something inappropriate and being belittling to me. But if I had just accepted it and moved forward with the transaction, I could have restrained myself and not made a comment that was unnecessary. Therefore, I have made the comment and now I need to make amends for it. That's in an everyday situation, which is more focused on the 10th step because we do this on an ongoing basis. But let's say there was a business deal or a romantic relationship, and you stole, or you were dishonest, or you were selfish during that relationship or business transaction, and people were hurt. This is a wreckage of the past. And Bill is saying that if we don't clean up our side of the street and admit our faults, repair the damage, and demonstrate a change in our behavior, we will never overcome drinking. And the remorse and the guilt and the resentment will continue to live within our subconscious. So that is the point of the amend and why we don't look at the character defects of others and blame them as an obstacle for not making it. So let's move on to fear. So now the next obstacle is fear. Now we're going to skip to the bottom of page 78 at the last paragraph, which is the third full paragraph. When listing the people we have harmed, most of us hit another solid obstacle. We got a pretty severe shock when we realized that we were preparing to make a face-to-face admission of our wretched conduct to those we had hurt. It had been embarrassing enough when in confidence we admitted these things to God, to ourselves, and to another human being. But the prospect of actually visiting or even writing the people concerned now overwhelmed us, especially when we remembered in what poor favor we stood with most of them. There were cases, too, where we had damaged others who were still happily unaware of being hurt. Why, we cried, shouldn't bygones be bygones? Why do we have to think of these people at all? These were some of the ways in which fear conspired with pride to hinder our making a list of all the people we had harmed. Okay, so now, by the way, the word all is in italics. That means it's important. That means everybody that we've harmed, not just the ones we pick and choose. So why can't we let bygones be bygones? There are people who may not even have a clue that we harm them. Why bring up that issue or bring that into light? That is water under the bridge as far as we're concerned. It can only hurt them again. Possibly, possibly not. We don't know. Each situation is different. We have to scrutinize it and discuss it with our sponsor before we draw that conclusion. But nonetheless, we are in fear now of making these amends. What would the outcome be? Why should I make an amend? Why not just let it go? How come I have to do this? And what we do understand when we do this is that when we're reluctant to do this, we completely understand that our pride, sure, could be hurt, and it conspires with fear. But the fear is of the outcome. What happens if I make this amend to me? What happens when the cat's out of the bag and everybody knows what I did to harm you, even if they didn't know? There are too many scenarios, and worst case at that, running through our minds that prevent us from proceeding. It's overwhelming, and the act of visiting them is very difficult because we're ashamed, and it takes courage to walk into a room and look at somebody in the eye and admit where you were at fault. So this is dangerous, Bill is saying, because we use fear as a obstacle, otherwise he wouldn't call it an obstacle if it wasn't dangerous, that could trip us up into making amends to people who absolutely should be on your list. And if they are, then fear may be preventing you from the willingness. I certainly had people I had completely embarrassed myself in front of and acted like a complete fool. Spilling drinks, knocking tables over, and doing things that was just out of control in their homes. And now I had to go back to them. I was remembered as the loose gorilla in the room. I was a joke, and I had to go back to them years later and make restitution for the damage that I've caused. When you break things in somebody's house, it's easy to just say, well, they made fun of me, they got their revenge, and now I'm the laughing stock for years, so why should I have to do that? Well, now I am creating my own outcome. The bottom line is nobody gets hurt, and I owe them reparations for the damage I caused in their house. That was one example. There are company events that I went on where I completely embarrassed myself, and I had to go back to management and apologize and see what I could do to repair that damage. These are people from my distant past that did not need to hear from me again as far as my disease was concerned. But nonetheless, it had to be addressed because it was truthfully haunting me. These memories would be shoved down into a deep, deep, dark closet, and there they would sit in the dark. And unless I addressed them, they would deteriorate into further guilt and remorse. And it changed my personality for the better when I actually addressed what I thought were trivial amends, which were not at the end of the day. So now we've covered fear. Now let's move on to denial. That is in the first full paragraph on 79. Some of us, though, tripped over a very different snag. We clung to the claim that when drinking, we never hurt anybody but ourselves. Our families didn't suffer because we always paid the bills and seldom drank at home. Our business associates didn't suffer because we were usually on the job. Our reputations hadn't suffered because we were certain few knew of our drinking. Those who did would sometimes assure us that, after all, a lively bender was only a good man's fault. What real harm, therefore, had we done? No more surely than we could easily mend with a few casual apologies. These are merely excuses not to make amends. Not to make an amend as an excuse is denial. I did not really hurt anybody. There was no real damage being done. I was only drunk. Anyone could understand. We've all been drunkards at some point, even if we're not alcoholics. People have made fools of themselves. Why should I have to go out and make restitution to people that I harmed? I didn't really harm, in my opinion, anyway. I drank at home, which I only drank at home, by the way, in the end of my drinking. And even if you drank at home during the whole course of your drinking, think of all the people that you denied your time to. There may have been people in your life that loved you very much, that would love to have spent more time with you, but you denied them that because you were drinking at home alone. Yes, you didn't hurt them physically, but you certainly did emotionally. So there's restitution that needs to be made, even if you isolated. And if you were extroverted drunk at times. I was both during different times in my drinking career. I had to make amends to both types of people, to both individuals that suffered from my isolationism as well as my overzealous extrovertism. So now I have to understand that these are not casual apologies. It says, you know, in the last podcast we read that a remorseful mumbling of an apology is not an amend and not enough. We have to sit down with the individual, and if we can't sit down with them, we write them a letter. Yes, Bill Wilson says in the fear category, writing the people concerned. Again, we need to make direct amends to people wherever possible. So be careful using a excuse to hide behind a typewriter or a keyboard. I don't know why I said typewriter, but use a keyboard instead of your voice and looking them in the eye. It depends. Are they in the same state? Will there be an opportunity to see them? Are they dead? Did you harm them by a keyboard? Or did you harm them in person? If you harmed them in person, don't you think that you owe them an in-person amend? So if you harm them by mail, then feel free to make amends via mail. Maybe they don't want to see you ever again. It's not considerate to show up banging down their door. So maybe you should ask them for a meeting before you show up at their house. And if they agree to it, then you show up at their house. But you should ask before you decide to hide behind the keyboard to avoid looking at them in the eye. Direct means direct. When we get in 9, that word is very precisely defined. So we do the best we can. Remember, we go as far as we can spiritually without harming anyone. So going as far as you can spiritually is much, there's much more spiritual growth in a personal direct amend than there is hiding behind a letter. But again, it depends on the situation. So I'm not telling you to do either or the other, but you have to decide when you outweigh what you're really doing. Are you doing this? Are you writing a letter out of avoidance, or is that the only way to communicate to them? And if it's out of avoidance, you know that you have to see them in person. So that's just something that I had rationalized as well when the letter writing issue came up with my sponsor. I said, look, I can write a letter to this ex-girlfriend that was devastated by my behavior. It's like, oh, did you have a pen pal relationship with her? The answer was no, I did not. So I had to see her if she was willing to see me. So that is the three things that you will always come across when you're rationalizing. I find that to be extremely helpful, because to know why I need to make amends is important, but why I rationalize to not make amends is just as important. And so now you know there's three things that you can categorize your rationalizations into. Is it blame, denial, or fear? And it could be all three in some certain cases. Very close relationships that were important to you that have been ruined are much more difficult to face than simply owing someone a little bit of money and paying it back. So we have to understand, it says here in 79 in the third full paragraph, this attitude, of course, is the end result of purposeful forgetting. It is an attitude which can only be changed by a deep and honest search of our motives and actions. So we really have to search deeply and honestly to know what our motive is in the amend and our action moving forward. So purposeful forgetting that, oh, it wasn't as bad as I thought, or they probably don't even remember. These are rationalizations and excuses for denial. Therefore, we need to categorize it accordingly. Now, what about people who can't be made restitution to? Maybe they're gone. So let's read on page 79. Though in some cases, this is the third full paragraph, last paragraph at the bottom of the page. Though in some cases we cannot make restitution at all, and in some cases action ought to be deferred, we should nevertheless make an accurate and really exhaustive survey of our past life as it has affected other people. In many instances we shall find that though the harm done others has not been great, the emotional harm we have done ourselves has. Very deep sometimes, quite forgotten, damaging emotional conflicts persist below the level of consciousness. At the time of these occurrences, they may actually have given our emotions violent twists, which have since discolored our personalities and altered our lives for the worse. So, as I stated just a few moments ago, our personalities are now changed and altered as a result of this guilt and remorse and these harms we've inflicted on others. That's why I said that even though that the outcome may be scary, it's scarier to know that my personality may still be twisted and emotionally have emotional violent twists in my subconscious, which is a level of persist below the level of consciousness, Bill says. So now I have to understand that there are things that have happened so long ago, and that's why I need to take an exhaustive survey. Go chronological if you can. Remember where you were at that year, what school you were at. And then all of these events will start, popping back into mind, and you can write them down. As you go down your list, you can do it chronologically. Each segment of your life will have different episodes that will pop back up, bubble up for the moment. And that's when you jot it down on paper. And a list will have a name on that. You'll be like, oh man, I forgot about that guy back in high school that, we did that terrible thing to me and the guys. And now, I have to make amends if I can. That's something that sits in the level of below your consciousness, and now you've recalled it. So, you know, there's lots of tools now to find that individual. Maybe it's Facebook, maybe it's the internet, I don't know. But if it's possible to apologize for the event, maybe you should. It sounds like, you know, it doesn't sound like to me anyone would be harmed by making restitution for people that you've hurt way back when you were younger. Certain events do stand out. We can't, you know, make amends for every comment or every negative thing we've said. We don't probably remember most of them, but there's always one or two things that added up to an evil action that we do remember, and we wish that we could take it back, but maybe we could at least let that person know that, you know, humankind isn't all that bad. Maybe we give them a new look at humanity. Maybe that's the amend. Maybe the individual you've harmed says, you know what? That guy really hurt me back then. I hadn't thought about that in years, but maybe it sits in their subconscious. And what you've done, you were able to release that from them and giving them peace of mind that humanity isn't so bad after all. Think about that. Think about what you just did for another human being that you've harmed inexplicably during that time, let's say in high school. So you may think it's nothing, but it can change the course of their life, and it will certainly free you of your emotional violent twists that are related to that you can't even see. So these discolored and our personalities will now become more gleeful and happy as this weight of this guilt underneath comes out. So how do you know that you've harmed them if you haven't done a fourth through seventh step? You haven't. They may not have even popped into your head unless you've done four through seven. So now you know that you have humility, that this person or place or thing or situation does need to be rectified to some extent, and reparations do need to be made. Even if you can't find that person, maybe you do something nice to somebody who suffered from the same wrath that you imposed upon another, and you're seeing it happen again in someone else's life, and you intervene and stop the harm somehow. I don't know. Wherever possible is up to God. And that word wherever is in step 9. We're not there yet, but things do present, opportunities do present themselves when you least expect it. But this whole program in the 4 through 10 is about bringing the subconscious to the conscious. If I don't have steps to bring things that are deep down seated within me to the conscious mind, where I absolutely can look and think about what was sitting underneath, the way to do that is through steps 4 through 9. So the purpose of making restitutions is really important. We have, you know, basic flaws. We have fundamental difficulties, and these things have harmed many other people. And what we do here is try to get the willingness to make restitution to those people based on all of the defective flaws that we have uncovered. So that's why I say selfishness or dishonesty and fear and inconsideration and self-seeking, they're just words. So now we need to see, you know, how do we define these words into actions? How have they caused harm? Oh, I see now how they've caused harm. So I can't just ask my higher power to remove them moving forward if I'm not willing to remove the guilt that is associated with them. So what is harm, right? There's different types of harm. I kind of jumped ahead in prior podcasts and defined it, but this is where I got it from. I didn't make it up. It's on page 80. It's in the second full paragraph. So I'll now read that paragraph, the sentence in that paragraph. To define the word harm in a practical way, we might call it the result of instincts in collision, which cause physical, mental, emotional, or spiritual damage to people. So Again, Bill addresses instincts in collision. We talked about in step four thoroughly what instincts are. They're base instincts that all animals have, and humans have animal instincts. And they are for society, for security, and for sex. And there are subsections of each of those three pillars of our instincts, which I've uploaded to the Dropbox. But by now, you should know what all those subsections are and be able to pinpoint which one was in collision with what other instinct. And when those are under threat or we're not getting what we want from society, from our security, and from our sexual ambitions, we may cause physical, mental, emotional, or spiritual damage to people. Now, the instinct didn't cause the damage. The character defect associated with it did. You know, there's nothing wrong with having a desire for financial or emotional security. But if we take it to an extreme and we demand it and we want to control it in others, then what we have is a problem. They're not giving us what we want, or maybe they're blackmailing us in our minds and threatening it. So now we need to go into defense mode. And now I have to think of a way to strategize how to get back at this individual who's now threatening my instincts in collision. So I may harm them. I may physically harm them, like, you know, punch them in the face or hurt them in some physical manner. I may mentally mess with their head. I may, you know, make phone calls to their house and hang up. I may get revenge in a series of strange and odd ways that drive them crazy and take away their peace and serenity. I may emotionally harm them. I may drive them up a wall if I have the chance. And ultimately, I may break their spirit if I have enough power to do so. And I'm taking maybe a weaker person who is an easy target. I may spiritually damage them, and they may lose faith that they once had as a result of me doing things and saying things about them that cause them much harm. And I basically have taken away their joy of living. You know how sometimes people just give you that look? You know, when you say something so cruel to somebody or do something so mean, they just give you that look only another alcoholic can identify with. And then there's that just that pit in your stomach that, wow, I can't believe that I was able to cause that kind of damage in another human being. I must be an evil POS. And then you start to believe that you are an evil person. So you might as well just continue hurting others because you're tainted goods. But that's not true. Human beings are not evil. My sponsor made that perfectly clear to me. And this book does too. We are not innately evil. We are all born infants with kindness, love, patience, and tolerance. I've yet to be shown a baby that is evil from the get-go. In their terrible twos, you start to see the tantrums they throw from not getting what they want, or, you know, being under threat of losing what they have, like a toy. They will go into rages. This is similar to the alcoholic. We go into rages because our animal instincts are under threat. A little child baby does not have these animal instincts, but they clearly reach out for people. There's a love and kindness in their eyes, and they have done nothing, and nor have they been taught tolerance, patience, love, and kindness. These are things that were given to them by God. The drop of God is given to them right from birth. Therefore, we must learn our character defects over time through experience. And when we have multiple experiences of being threatened and denied of what we think we deserve or entitled to, nothing can happen that's good. All that can happen is character flaws growing and festering, And eventually that behavior, that selfish behavior, will turn into a selfish act. And so people therefore commit evil acts. Now, you could say, well, sociopaths are evil. There are people who commit murders that are evil. I would even beg to differ. I would say that they have mental and emotional problems, that maybe their brain chemistry is out of whack beyond just being an alcoholic. Maybe they're not an alcoholic. I have heard of awful things that people have done, the shootings. All of these random acts of evil take place. But if you look underneath every human being, there is no excuse for what they've done. I'm not saying that. But there has been emotional or mental problems that have caused them to commit an act of absolute evil. But that does not mean they are an evil demon. And so that should give you some hope that every person, and if, like I said, if you don't believe me, look at a newborn baby. Even the sociopath as a newborn baby had love, patience, kindness, and tolerance. But they had a mental or an emotional deformity that caused them to create an evil act later in life. Do you want to be one of those people? Do you feel as if you are an evil person? And if so, to be quite honest, you're being dishonest. Because that is not being able to tell true from false. You are not an evil person. You've probably done evil acts and hurt other people, but you are not innately an evil demon or separate than anybody else in the human race as far as having the capacity to be loving and kind. That's why when you pretend to be loving and kind, you're also being dishonest. Because if you haven't done these steps, you only are acting loving and kind. And what is a pretender? What is an actor? They're dishonestly pretending to be something they're not. So even though what they think is good is still egomania. So try removing your flaws, which is what the program is. It's a process of removal. And then watch and see kindness and love in you come out that you didn't even know you had. And that's when you'll know that you're not being dishonest. So back to the point of harm. Have I committed any of these physical, mental, or emotional, or spiritual damage upon another? If this is true, yes, I have. We have to consider them as being put on the list. Bill Wilson goes into an example of all the emotional and instinctual deformities that can create harm. And he discusses that thoroughly in the rest of this paragraph, which you can read on your own. But that, you know, has to always retroactively go back to step four. Step four, underlying our drinking, our destructive cause of our drinking, is instincts and collision. We read that in step four. And therefore, we can't cut that out or carve that out of step eight. So let's backtrack to step four. On page 42, in the second paragraph towards the bottom, in the last, almost the last sentence, it says, nearly every serious emotional problem can be seen as a case of misdirected instincts. And then on page 44, he says at the second full paragraph, first sentence, alcoholics especially should be able to see that instinct run wild in themselves is the underlying cause of their destructive drinking. So there we go. These, and then now we go back to page 80 to define the worm harm in a practical way. We may call it the result of instincts in collision. I can't begin to tell you how many meetings I go to where people who have a lot of years just don't see how these instincts are out of whack. They just think they are evil and they're asking God to make them good. And that's all they need to do. Nowhere in the book does it say that. It's clearly Carl Jung who uncovered the mental part of this program. That's what Bill is basing it off of. So, you know, Carl Jung, no human power can restore you to sanity, which is in the is the B of the ABCs. But we also have to understand what the human condition is. And we all have God-given instincts, but in alcoholics are out of whack. We have a missing chip that governs them or regulates them. And that is why we drink destructively. And now, once we insert the first drink into our body, okay, we are physically allergic to it. So that's why we have the physical part of the disease, which is what Dr. Silkworth has been saying all along, in the doctor's opinion. So now we need to do the spiritual part. And the spiritual part is making amends to other people and goodwill towards men. And that means rectifying harms that we have caused upon others. And that gives us a spiritual experience. And that is what will give you a spiritual awakening. But you don't get to get the spiritual awakening till you understand the physical, mental, and spiritual parts of this program and do all the steps related to each of those ABCs. So the point here is not just to make a list. A lot of people think, oh, I've made my list, now I'm done. Now I might as well go into step 9. Absolutely not. If I have not done steps 4 through 7, I have no willingness. That is the second half of this step. The list isn't the easy part, but it's the simpler part of this step. If I don't understand what my flaws are, what my character defects are, what my shortcomings, mistakes, and wrongs are, which are all the same 5 things we talked about, then we have absolutely no humility. I don't understand where they originated, which is the exact nature of them, which is my out-of-whack instincts and collision. And therefore, I won't see any need to make an amend to another human being. I am just protecting my self-interest and my own God-given right to power, money, and sex, and everybody else is just in the way or wants to take it from me or is preventing me from getting it. And that can go from something as obvious as property all the way to a simple, useless argument to be right, which can cause 5 police cars to show up over something minuscule originally that turns into a murder scene. So let's not fool ourselves that instincts vary from 3 different pillars in multiple ways. And if we don't understand where they originate in us, then we have no understanding of how the character flaw was activated and no understanding of why our emotions are out of control and why we hurt another human being when they are out of control. Now, I say it as if I have this whole thing down. Now, I understand it. I absolutely understand it. As I'm explaining it to you in the most layman terms as possible and sticking to the pivotal sentences and paragraphs in the literature that actually tie the 12 steps together. There are lots of paragraphs in between that I'm not reading. Bill elaborates these basic points that I'm also elaborating, so you can read that yourself. But the main points need to be pointed out so you people who are listening can understand the steps in piecemeal and tie them together. So now you know if you're on step 8 and you just jump to step 8 in this podcast, you know nothing unless you've listened to or read the rest of the program in the prior steps. What? Why do I need to make amends? Well, I'm guilty. Okay. Well, that's not enough. You got to know why you're guilty. And the only way to do that and to build any humility is to go through the prior steps yourself. So I tie prior steps into every new step that we go over. I backtrack. Now, admitting your faults to another human being in 5 is important. But now let's say I'm not sure if this person deserves an amend. Well, maybe I should have a conversation with my sponsor on that. I had to do a fifth step to understand the exact nature of my wrongs, right? So now I have to do have another conversation with my harms to others list with my sponsor, so I can understand what amend needs to be made, if any at all. Maybe, I don't owe an amend, and I think I do, and I create a problem that I didn't have to create in the first place. Maybe I'm just being too grandiose, and I think that I did more harm than I actually did. We tend to do that as alcoholics. One of the things that the book says, I'll try to find here in a minute, but if I don't find it while I'm speaking, I don't want to lose my train of thought. So basically, it says that alcoholics are emotionally sensitive, childish, and grandiose. That's from psychologists who determined that that's the one three traits that all alcoholics have in common, is that we're emotionally sensitive, childish, and grandiose. So we may be sensitive to their reaction when we make an amend. We may be grandiose regarding how much harm we actually caused. And we're also childish. We've never really grown up. So little kids, we say how evil they can act and how mean they can be. We're astonished by it. Well, children do that. Children have no problems harming others as they figure their egos out in their childhood. Some ch children have bigger egos than others, and those egos harm others who are spiritually fit as children and maybe make that person's life or an adulthood more difficult. So we do things in our childhood that we regret, but we can't be too hard on ourselves. We can't go back to maybe elementary school and say, oh, that time that I threw milk, on the table, I need to go back to that school and make amends. That's ridiculous. There are certain things that we know were just part of our behavior, and they don't need to be directly addressed. So I doubt you would drink over that, but there are things that you will drink over that you may not think you will drink over, because what happens is we treat people with disrespect, and things start coming out of us sideways, and we don't know where the heck it's coming from. But it could very well be from that high school kid that you beat the crap out of and got away with it, but you don't want to make amends to him because you think well, it was just high school. But it was probably one of the biggest harms you caused in high school. So maybe that's why you still treat people like crap. So yes, that would be important, even though it seems like it would be a useless piece of action to do. So I have many, and personally, well, I'll talk about me for a minute. I have many, many regrets. I have many things that I've done in my life that created incomprehensible demoralization, and others were harmed as a result. I have a list that I'm still working on, and it's not possible to make amends to certain people yet, but I'm willing to. I have used other tools to find people, and have written them notes, knowing that I'm not going to be able to see them, but it was knocking on their door wasn't necessarily the right thing to do, and I did discuss that with my sponsor prior to actually doing so. There are women that would never want to see me again. But in that case, a letter is important. But now you need to remember that writing a letter may also incriminate you. So if you did things that she could bring to the police, and you're writing down a confession letter, and she wants to get revenge by bringing this letter to the cops, and now you're under arrest, I think you made a mistake. That's not what we're trying to do. We don't want to put ourselves in a position to be hurt. by the other individual we're making amends to. We have to be very cautious on what we put in writing. So you may think you're avoiding it, but you may be punishing yourself even worse than you realize by putting it in writing. So that may be something that you didn't think about. So when you're willing, the step does not say to take any action yet. Do not confuse step 8 with 9. Right now, we're just trying to muster the willingness. My father has passed since passed. There are many amends in my behavior that I would love for him to see. He will never see that, but he lives on in my heart. And I know that through me, the true Ilya is being... He didn't create me. He had me, but he knew me very well, and he knew what I could become and who I could be. And I know that he is a part of me, as my mother is. And by changing, he lives through me. And that is the only amend that I can make to my father, is by changing and allowing him to live through me, to be a part of who and what I am, rather than blocking him out with revenge and hate for the way that he treated me at certain times. He did the best we could looking back, and he had problems of his own, and... they did hurt me, and there are things that my ego would find and have found unforgivable. And at certain times when I'm in an emotional bind, I can even go back to blaming my father for how I turned out. But when I work the program, I'm capable of forgiveness, which is willingness as well. Can I not make exact direct amends to him? Of course not. But my higher power knows that. So my higher power will remove the guilt and remorse based in reality. If I create my own reality and pretend that somebody's not capable of seeing me when they fully well are, and I avoid them and make a half-measured amend, I'm being a coward. I'm being fearful, and therefore I need to revisit steps 4 through 7. And my sponsor has told me multiple times that I need to do that before I move forward with certain amends. But I did have a lot of good experiences with the easier ones, and the promises started to come through. I was amazed before I was halfway through with the amends, and at that point I felt so good I thought, well, maybe I shouldn't mess with it anymore. That's enough. But no, I did enjoy that spiritual time, but eventually the subconscious has a way of bubbling back up to the surface, and I eventually have to face the more difficult challenges ahead. So that's my experience without, you know, incriminating myself with people that I've harmed. I certainly have relatives that are friends that are still alive today that love me very much, always have, and it's taking time to be around them as a new person. And sometimes I'm in fear that they don't want me around anymore, but there are some who were only fair weather friends, and they're no longer in my life. But that's okay. I don't feel the need to be loyal to them. Which I used to when I was in my disease. I was loyal to the wrong people. I sold my soul to people for money or sex in return. And now I know that I was just self-seeking and fearful of my instincts not being satisfied. So if those people want to leave and don't have any interest, further interest in me, then so be it. But there are people that do, and new people are entering my life. I'm careful who I spend time with, because what happens when you get a welly and a sickie together, eventually you have two sickies. So I don't spend time with people who are sick. Even though I may have owed them an amends, I don't owe them my recovery. So if they choose to stay in their disease or stay emotionally ill or whatever the case may be, and they start bringing out my defects of character over a long period of time, I will have to forgive them, make amends, whichever is more appropriate, if not both, and walk away and move into my new life without them. Not easy things to do, but a higher power will help you do it, and you will know it's the right thing to do when that time comes for you. So I hope you understand a little bit more about the list, the willingness, and the obstacles that prevent us from doing this step. God bless you, and may you have a wonderful evening. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.